Hello, my fine friends. Welcome back to Destination Discourse. I'm your host, Stuart Butler. I'm joined today with Adam Stoker.
Hi,
I didn't even
Stuart.
have a word for you to describe you because I jabber-jabbered it.
Yeah. I've got a really important question for you today.
Okay.
Are you okay?
Why is that? Yeah, I'm great. How are you?
I just, that's two out of the last three episodes that your lead in was just
Just all over
brutal.
the place.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's because my brain is on 1,000 different projects at the same time. So I come into this zero preparation, as it shows, and we just start going.
It's more entertaining for me this way than when you have some prepared slight, just FYI.
Yeah. Oh, I've got plenty of those too. But I do think that it would not be this show if we prepared more and we edited those flubs out, So I'm committed to us being ridiculous on every level. So that's okay.
Yeah, I noticed I'm working on getting there.
I think you passed by it a long time ago, my friend. The ridiculous Adam Stoker, everybody.
There you go.
You know who's not ridiculous?
I do.
Who's that?
Her name's Emily Zertucci. I'm not sure if you're familiar with her.
She's the one, the only, the amazing Emily is with us again today. How are you, Emily?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
I think you might be our first four-peat on the show.
Oh, that feels great. Excited to rant. I definitely rant a lot more than I want to sometimes, but it's good to have, you guys doing what you do and the platform to do so.
Well, likewise, we the episodes you've been on now have you've had held the number one spot twice with two different episodes. You had one that talked about being a chief value officer versus a chief marketing officer, and then you had one talking about zombie metrics and Diet Coke analogies, and that one is currently our most listened to episode. So if you guys haven't heard that, it's phenomenal. What episode is that? That's I don't even remember. I have to go back and look.
It was during Christmas. I know we had a Christmas episode for the zombie metric conversation.
Yeah. Give me one sec. I'll tell everyone what episode number it is. They can go listen to it. It is episode 67. So data hangovers.
My kids will be so excited.
That's why
it's the biggest one. It's just because it's 6-7.
It
Same.
Is indeed.
My son.
Yeah.
My son
can
thinks
tell
it's
you broke
the
out young
funniest
kids.
thing. He thinks it's the funniest thing in the world. Like if there's anything that says 6-7, he like cracks up and does the 6-7 hand thing.
How to destroy it with any kids, right? When kids get into something, you just start doing it more than they do, and then it will become uncool really quickly. I remember when okay boomer was the thing, like all the kids said okay boomer to their parents all the time. I just started saying okay zoomer to everything they said, and they like within 2 weeks they stopped saying okay boomer. It was great. So you just need to start 6-7ing or 7-8ing, something else. It'll
Just
make
ruin
you
it.
crazy. That's right. Well, Emily, we're glad you're back on the show. You wrote another amazing article on Substack. If people aren't following you on Substack, they absolutely should, because you're writing some very controversial stuff. You're really challenging the status quo. I feel like you're the written version of this show in a lot of ways, like trying to push the envelope. So we're gonna have you regurgitate that article on the show, but we're also gonna debate it a little bit and spice it up. So it's gonna be a lot of fun. But before we get into that, you know what time it is. It's the time for the greatest segment in destination marketing. Time for Stu's News.
Oh, yeah. Just gotta let it go, Stuart. Just let it happen.
I realized I can just hit mute for like 30 seconds, and then I won't have to ever hear that again. It'd be great.
Yeah, I actually have been doing that when you talk on this show for a long time.
You'd have to mute for more than 30 seconds. I tend to ramble, but that's fine. Today's Stu's News is a follow-up from last week's. So last week we talked about Anthropic launching their Claude for Small Business and how they're going after small business with a complete vertical solution. Now we're talking about what both OpenAI and Anthropic are doing. OpenAI has raised like something like $4 billion, Anthropic about $1.5 billion from all the big venture capital firms to create either completely separate entities or separate divisions about deployment. So they're going to actually send in engineers to medium and large scale businesses to teach them how to use, to train their staff on how to use AI to develop actual AI platforms for bespoke for those businesses. And this is really, I think, the next frontier. You know, we've had this sort of the agent, the model frontier, where that's been the competition for a long time. But what we've seen in the recent months with Anthropic's massive growth in revenue, primarily due to Claude Code, we're seeing now that the total, a potential total addressable market may be much, much bigger than anyone anticipated, and really does add validity to the kind of the size of the investments that are going into these AI. You know, everyone was talking about there was going to be a bubble that burst at some point because the valuations of these companies was just too big and no one could ever generate the revenue needed. But I think Anthropic is, and OpenAI have been proving that wrong. This is that next frontier where the battle's going to happen to get people actually using specific models, not based on the quality of the model, but on actually educating people on how to use their specific products. So this is exciting, I think, in terms of the how it's going to accelerate adoption. It also, for me, means that there's a lot more employees are going to be versed in AI. So as it, when it comes to hiring and things like that, then I think we're going to have more of an opportunity to find people that are AI savvy. But Adam, what are your thoughts on this new frontier of a battle right now?
Well, it's funny because I've heard a lot of the national pundits that talk about AI. They've said that one of the biggest opportunities for people to become millionaires over the next several years is the people who are going to essentially be the implementation layer for AI that are going to go into businesses and train them how to use it. And I feel like this whole economy that was promised to the next generation of millionaires was just wiped out by Claude here, because Claude's just going to handle the implementation themselves. The other thing that I think is interesting about what they're doing is, what do you do when you've received what tr $1 trillion in investment, and you need to make sure that you don't wait for the adoption curve? Well, you've got to accelerate the adoption curve, right? So they're doing this to make sure that they can get the desired return on investment and not have to wait for the mid to late adopters to have to start using AI. They're just trying to push everybody through the adoption curve, which I think is a really smart way to do it, because if they just wait for people to understand it, I think you've got a massive segment of the population, both on the consumer and on the business side, that are not going to adopt it for a very long time unless they have someone to hold their hand.
Yeah, I mean the human element was the bottleneck, right? They're trying to shrink that bottleneck by this. I also think it's likely that they're gearing up for IPOs at some point. And so the IPO is the valuation is going to be very dependent on their current run rate. So there's a massive incentive to accelerate this on a lot of levels. Emily, what are your thoughts on this?
I was actually just looking at some of the recent news, and it looks like just yesterday, May 14th, that Anthropic kicked off a 10-city training tour in some of these major cities, Tulsa, Dallas, Chicago, several others. But they're putting out a free half-day AI influency workshop for 100 small businesses leaders per stop, with every attendee getting a free month of Claude Max. So that's happening. The two biggest AI labs in the world looked at the same chart in the same week, and they came to the same conclusion, because you see OpenAI's answer of sending consultants into the Fortune 500s, but then you see Anthropic's answer of running free workshops in Tulsa. But again, like to your point, the bottleneck's gone. Like, they're using that as the response to the bottleneck and saying, we're gonna force this on you in a lot of ways.
I'd love to see some of our big institutions going after some of these big AI frontier companies and saying, hey, the travel industry needs you guys to come in and tackle us as well. Like, so rather than just looking at the geography of where businesses are, look at the industry, the vertical industries. We've seen Anthropic did a bunch around finance industries already, right? So let's try to get them to come in and do the same thing for the DMOs. Be amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Well, let's jump into the topic, because I'm eager to chew this one up. I think it's really fascinating. You're not one that's shy of an opinion, which I like. I think you're willing to not just challenge the status quo, but you're also willing to call people out, which is refreshing. There's not many folks in this industry do that, and so we We definitely appreciate it. You're grinning from ear to ear because you sort of
Yeah.
wear it as a badge of honor, I know. But tell us a little bit about the article you wrote on Substack. Well, first tell people where they can find it, so if they want to go read it and follow along, they can. But then let's jump into the actual content.
Yeah, absolutely. The Substack, really just go to my LinkedIn profile, Emily Zertucci, and then just click the view my newsletter. That's the easiest way to get there. Or you can go direct Emily C, as in cat, Zertucci at .substack.
Is that your middle
But
name? Emily Catzatucci.
no, C as in Camille. It
Okay, there you go. Nice.
would be kind of cool though if it was like cat,
Yeah.
maybe like Catherine or Kathy. But
Yeah.
yes, this latest Substack article really touches on a couple of things that I've been seeing in this industry, very, very much most recently, but also getting the frustration from a couple of conferences I've attended and seeing the wide disconnect between how we are being measured and what we are doing in this age of budget scrutiny. And I want to pause with a really important point because the way our industry is talking about AI in this moment right now, not for the majority, but a lot of people are wrong. And not partially wrong. I genuinely think there's a structural disconnect because we have been optimizing for a discoverability model that like it died in 2024. And I think there's a lot of data that's screaming at us that most of our executive leadership decision makers, they're just not listening because like I'll anchor you with a number, 25%. 25% is, I'm going to reference Sojourn's 2026 State of the Destination Marketing Report, which is, you can grab it on Sojourn's website, but it dropped in February and 350 plus DMOs surveyed globally. But 25% of those DMOs are prioritizing brand awareness this year. And
Yeah.
last year in that same report, 59%. So we cut top of funnel investment by more than half in just 12 months, which I get because what we're going through and what we're seeing in this economy. But the US alone is even worse because a majority of those DMOs are now prioritizing room nights, direct revenue, upper brand, which, for the most part, we've kind of already always done. But the share siting conversion as the primary metric doubled in 1 year, according to the study. So, I mean, we're not a fast moving industry. So, when 350 DMOs all shift their priorities in the same way that fast in 12 months is to me like one of the largest signals I've seen in this industry produce in a decade. And I've been in this industry for 11 years. So, the other side of the chart, and this is the alarming piece, Adobe Digital Insights, travel site traffic. Generative AI sources went up 3,500% year over year. McKinsey, their study in March 2026, more than half of US travelers are using some form of AI planning in their tools. Google's own data just last month, search interest in AI travel assistance up 350% in the past year. AI flight booking up 315%. So the base rate of visitor discovery behavior is shifting decisively to the AI layer. And it's not a 12-month trend. It's like happening so fast. It's creating a completely different structure. And we've had these two charts running in exactly opposite directions of what the DMO is doing and what we are seeing in the market because visitor discovery is moving towards AI and the industry investment is moving away from brand. So I think that the story most of our industry is telling itself about why it's wrong. And the story right now is that performative investment is the AI response. I mean, we're measuring more, we're attributing more cleanly, we're getting closer to the revenue, but therefore, we think we're doing the AI era work. And that story to me, it's like it's wrong. AI doesn't reward attribution; it rewards citation, and I think that's a very different game. I don't hear a lot about citation taking priority in the brand side of the story. And there's destinations that are just not talking about it or they are confusing the two. And I am worried that people are going to find out the hard way in like 18 to 36 months from now because, before anyone says, well, brand awareness, it's hard to measure. Yes, I agree. It is, it's, I came from the CMO seat. It is, yes, it can be very hard to measure. But the same was true in 1995 when we were just running billboards and no one in the industry was about to vote to cut their top of funnel investment by 60% in 12 months. So I think there's something else driving this. And, my read is like, and I'll defend this, is that the boards we report to are, they're running their cycles or monthly, quarterly, and then the performance dashboards that they look gorgeous and they're looking better and better. But it's the brand line item that pays the price every single time. And it's, that retreat at, it's catastrophic to me, that we're really cutting off our own feet right now. And I think that's something that we need to really look into.
It's a time bomb for sure. I think to restate what you're saying is, at Focus, our investments are going to the things that we think we can control, but it's very short-sighted, right? We can show short-term vanity metrics that are advantageous to us, position us well with our board, but the world around us is changing in such a way that is going to inevitably collapse in a very short amount of time. Because if we don't have demand, all of those metrics are going to suffer. So we can play a little bit of smoke and mirrors in the short term, in the same way that a new GM can come to a hotel and make the P&L look great by cutting costs, right? They can measure profitability because they reduced their expenses, but in the long term, they erode what makes them great and destroy the funnel. So I think what you've described is very accurate. I'd love to spend a little bit of time sort of talking about the why this is happening. Like, I have some theories, but I'd love to hear yours and Adam's.
But before we get into that, I just want to share for the listeners, the Desties, the quote that made me reach out to Emily and say, okay, let's do this again. And it was that midway through the second paragraph, you say, we're measuring the wrong things, optimizing for the wrong outcomes, and doing it at the worst possible moment in destination marketing history. And I just felt like the combination of those three things in one sentence, I think Stuart's right. We need to dig into the why that's happening, but I think you articulated that so well that the timing for us to be optimizing for the wrong thing could not be worse.
And quick anchor for anyone listening who doesn't know me. I'm on the brand and innovation side at Visit Corpus Christi, which is in South Texas on the Gulf Coast. So if I ever talk about my market, that's where I'm talking about. But a couple of weeks ago, I did run a test. I use Claude. We just adopted it with our team. It's amazing, Pro Claude. But I asked it the most basic questions a real visitor would ask, like, where should I stay in Corpus Christi if I bring my family in for a long weekend? Nothing fancy, but the kind of question I get, the answer usually comes out good. It names about, I don't know, four properties, got the Bayfront versus Padre Island trade-off, right? It gets things right. And it gives me a thoughtful read. But what matters is, like, I didn't write that answer. My team didn't write that answer. It wasn't a press release. It wasn't directly any of the partners I'd normally point to or point a visitor toward when somebody were to text me asking what to do. So that model is synthesizing it from an open web and it decides on its own authority what to surface. So I ran a dozen more inquiries, like rainy day with kids, best Bayfront beach weekend without, the same pattern, confident answers, broadly accurate, missing about half the partners that I would actually tell a real visitor. Not because the model has anything to do with them. It's just because the model couldn't find a reason to cite them. And there's not enough information about them in the language AI is reading. So for them to make the cut. So in this microcosm, it's the entire visibility economy. The model is deciding who gets surfaced. The model is hunting for citation. And our industry just spent 12 months disinvesting from that exact work that produces it. So the way I think about that framing, and I want to be clear, I picked up the term, the new visibility economy phrase. I didn't invent that. It's actually been floating around for a while, but it's the cleanest articulation of what I think is happening. And it came from this guy. He's a CEO and president of Renaissance Consultancy. His name is Chris Fair. And they're building a place branding firm out in Vancouver, I believe. And advise destinations, cities, developers. But he published an essay on his site back in February called "Something Big is Happening in Place Marketing Too." And the frame he used is really what stuck with me. He calls 2026 the era of algorithmic welcome. Sounds fancy, but like I'm actually going to read it from my notes directly. It's that when your destination's biggest competitor is the algorithm, you must be legible to the machine to remain irreplaceable to the human. That captures to me all of the work. And I think for 25 years, our discoverability is assumed that humans are making the decision. SEO, paid social content, it's all been optimized into a human's consideration set, right? So the human could compare and click, but in 2026, the human is not the agent anymore because the agent is a model and the model is summarizing for them. So the operative question for us is not, are we ranked? It's, are we cited? Which to me is, you know, a different way of approaching our work. And it's a different content structure. It's a different team configuration for most DMOs. And I know that we have built ourselves up to win one game, and now we're playing in a completely different game, which I feel for the agencies because I know they're trying to struggle on, you know, having an identity crisis right now too. But I think, you know, I don't think a large portion of our industry has clocked that yet.
Well, it's brand new, right? And we're not, like you said, we're not risk takers in general. We're not fast to innovate. I think it's going to take time for the shoe to drop in terms of seeing the net effect of this. Like we can optimize short term and look really good right now, like we've already established. But let's dig into the why. Like why is this happening? Like I think Adam talks a lot about the illusion of relevance in the DMOs, and I think we're doubling down on that right now because there's so many DMOs that are led by folks that and not it's not that they're not just not adopting AI, it's that they actively are dismissive of it in part. You know, some of these folks are so fearful of AI
Agree.
that they're almost pretending like this little head in the sand. They're trying to pretend like it's not a big factor. I'm going to focus on what I know and double down on what I know. And what I know is, hey, my business is like clicks. Let's tweak things lower in the funnel so I can drive more clicks to my members. Let's do the same metrics we've always measured, but do it more and screw the rest, screw what happens later on, you know, and they're not thinking about the fact that if your brand isn't in the prompt at the beginning, or if your biggest stakeholders don't have the citations, you're not going to be visible, period. You won't be in the decision set. And you can't pay your way into that right now. Maybe eventually there'll be a way to pay your way into it. But I think it's inevitable this is going to happen. I don't know if we figured out how to change it for a lot of DMOs. I think there's going to be 10% of DMOs that will figure it out. I think Christie's one of those, right? I think there's others that are going to figure it out, but we know as an industry, we sort of rise and fall together. And my biggest fear is some, if not the majority of DMOs are going to become so irrelevant that they get defunded, and that's going to cause a trickle-down effect even to the ones that are effective, you know?
This is when you talk about the why, I think part of the why is we've built our everything from the way we measure our relevance to the way we manage our teams, the way we manage our brands on playing defense, on justifying our existence. The only way we can turn the tide on this is shifting to offense and actually making decisions based on the next 10 years as opposed to the next board meeting. And right now, so many people, I don't even think AI has anything to do with why we're in the situation we're in. It's because we've continued to optimize for lower and lower and lower funnel tactics, and we've ignored brand because we want to play defense in the board meeting. Whereas if those that are focused on brand are prepared for the AI era, and this is just now bringing it to the forefront that we've caused a major problem and a major disconnect. And I think you're spot on, Emily. It's why I loved your article is brand is the way out of this, and we've divested of brand, what, by double since last year? And that's really scary.
So I think this is the part I think is it's structural, right? It's not tactical, and it's not a wrong KPI mistake. It's a pattern we have as an industry, as a country, full stop. It's where the hard, expensive, unsexy, long-term decision gets deferred until it becomes a full crisis. And what I want to walk through actually is one example that hits pretty close to home for me. So I live in Corpus Christi, and lately our destination has been in the news, and not for the reason any of us in tourism want to be in the news for. And that's for the possibility of running out of water, like literally running out. The New York Times posted about this. The Texas Tribune is posting about this. So it's not like a back page local story. It's pretty bad. It's local. I mean, it's not local news. It's national headlines about Texas Gulf Coast City potentially being in a serious water situation and running out of water. So we're dealing with that right now. Here's the part that makes it pretty wild is that the reason we are in this predicament is because our city council has had a desalination plant on the table for a literal decade. And we are on the Gulf. We have an entire body of water right here. We have the technology. We have at various points had the funding. And literally for 10 years, this has been deferred year after year. And now, city council, no surprise, we are in an insane water crisis situation. So my city council meetings have been some of the best reality TV show on air right now. And I did put this in my Substack. There's a link to view. Like, go ahead and ramp up those views. But I have been in a group chat about this. So anyway, it's a problem. But the reason I bring this up is because it's a perfect case study of what happens when you don't put emphasis on the future of what could happen to your destination. The decision makers had 10 years of warnings. They deferred the hard, expensive call. And now the city is in a crisis. It's in national news, and it's affecting our reputation as a destination in real time. So that is exactly the dynamic playing out with brand visibility for DMOs right now, like across the country. We are deferring the long-term investment because the short-term metrics look safer. Just like our city deferred the desal plant because the bond was expensive and a lot of other issues, but the visibility version is going to land downstream probably in 18 months from now, if not sooner, when bookings start softening, when nobody can trace why. And that's just not at the DMO level, because the same pattern one tier up, like think of Brand USA and the big beautiful bill last summer when they cut their federal match, to the 20 million, the 80% cut right before FIFA and America 2250, like right before the LA Olympics. And then we got that Visit USA Act introduced in November to restore the funding. And then 6 months later, today, it's still not passed. So, like, we're about to host what was supposed to be the largest sporting event in human history this year. And our national tourism marketing organization is operating at 20%. Like, I don't know how to characterize that other than it's a stress test we were voluntold for. And when you think about our state DMOs, our city DMOs, we're being voluntold by our boards and our PIDs to prove ROI, prove ROI, prove ROI. And the inbound numbers are like they're reading like a stress test. There was an article in Afar that talks about the inbound Canadian inbound dropping 22% in 2025, or the tourism revenue risk this year is 12.5 billion. Like that, it's constantly declining, with every other country up. So the story, once like we want to tell, is that FIFA would fix this, right? But FIFA is not going to fix this. I don't know if they can fix themselves. But I would say like the damage is a structural budget cut to the marketing arm of US tourism that we are walking into some like insane, unprecedented events. Like the mechanics are changing. You defer that boring carrying cost long enough, and now you're getting a crisis. Like the water guys here in Corpus, the Brand USA at the federal level, the funnel at the DMO level, it's the same story, just different categories. And the only people who get to skip those consequences are the ones paying for the boring carrying costs early.
So we sort of established why it's happening, right? We know that there's short-term incentives for people, that there's short-term thinking that's happening. There's a risk aversion that we've, in a lot of ways, we're culpable to as DMOs, right? Because for decades, we've been in this mode where we've structured ourselves so we get paid for what our stakeholders get from us, not what we do, right? And so their expectation is, I give you X dollars a year, and especially if you're a member-driven organization like us, they expect an ROI, a direct ROI for that. So we've sort of created this monster where there's an expectation where now we've got to switch the dial from getting paid for what we give them to getting paid for what we do holistically. But I'm going to step back because this is destination discourse. I'm not necessarily going to agree with what I say, but I'm going to play the devil's advocate role for this argument a little bit, because you could be forgiven for looking this into a situation where you're saying, I want to invest in places I know I can measure, right? And you make a great point that we used to not measure anything, right? But then we went through the digital revolution, and the expectation is we can measure impact. Now, most DMOs aren't doing that well. They're measuring vanity metrics for sure, but there's still a measurement of a metric of success, quote unquote, that we're taking a look at. Right now, none of the LLMs, none of the AI companies have really developed a methodology for us. There's not a Google Analytics for AI right now, right? There's not anything for me to say, hey, what influence did I have? How many times did I show up? There's third parties that are trying to cobble some of this together, but it's not at a point yet where I can really say the investment I made here had this impact on AI and me showing up in visibility, and therefore, I influence this much to your business, right? That ecosystem hasn't matured yet or hasn't developed. So when I'm under pressure for where I invest every dollar, where there's tangible places those dollars could be invested that aren't marketing, that our elected officials are saying, hey, I'd rather put this money into product development or public safety or desalination plants. There's going to be, if I play the long game now without spending a lot of time educating people on why I'm doing it, my boards, my elected officials, if I just make the strategic shift, it may exacerbate my downfall because I don't have time to realize the benefit. And even if I do, I can't measure it and demonstrate that I had that impact. And so all I'm going to be doing is showing less short-term impact without a promise of long-term impact, and therefore I could lose my funding in the short term. Like, I don't know if I have enough runway to be able to get away with that. That would be my counter.
I mean, essentially what you're asking is, do you put your personal well-being on the line for the sake of your destination? Because that's essentially what the ask is, right?
Yeah,
Is
100%.
and so okay, now we're kind of at the nitty-gritty of the question. How do you convince an industry full of people whose livelihoods depend on their current jobs to sacrifice their individual situation for what's best for the destination? Or how do we provide education for the stakeholders that is valuable and compelling enough to help protect the people that we're asking to take this big leap?
I just had this conversation with my CEO yesterday because we are in the boat of needing to prove ROI, and we shift a lot of our money into conversion because it's like what the board wants, and it's hard. I think a lot of DMOs, like, and it's not our fault, but we're losing the plot. Like right now, all we are thinking about is ourselves. Like, how do I save myself? How do I save myself from dying and, getting my budget cut? When we need to really holistically evaluate what is the point of being a DMO? Like, what is it? It's to lift the destination. It's to help our partners. It's to be that voice of reason and education for our workforce. The advocacy component needs to connect with the AI side. I need all the partners to understand and be educated on a rising tide lifts all ships. If I want to increase my visibility with my DMO presence, we need to be doing the exact same thing with every single partner, the restaurants, the attractions, like all at the same time, so that you can get them to speak the good word especially those on your board. Like if you have business owners on your board, hoteliers on your board, they need to be educated on the magnitude of change that is occurring in this destination or your destination so that they can be educated on how to save themselves with visibility. And that way you have everyone understanding the point of this and understanding that long term, this is going to save us long term. This is unprecedented. This is the age of, we haven't seen something like this since the internet. And I think no one is realizing that importance is we are a marketing arm for the destination to remain competitive. And if you're cutting out the marketing arm to be competitive, what do you think the other cities are going to do? And how are you going to remain visible if you only have one entity climbing its way to up when no one else is doing it because they don't believe it or they haven't been educated on it? It's a huge undertaking. I get it, but we need to be investing in this. We need to be really focusing on this because the window is pretty tight.
Well, I'll tell you a little bit. I'll give you a little peek behind the curtain of how we're trying to tackle this, right? We are trying to make that shift from what people get from us directly to what we do as an organization. I'm convinced that your philosophy is right? We've got to have the brand awareness and the appetite to come to our destination, and not the destination, but the sum of all the experiences in our destination is what matters, right? And so if I look at the amount of money we invest, even though we're a well-funded DMO, when I look at all of our stakeholders combined and what they invest in marketing, it's significantly higher than what I do. And if I look at the amount of noise that's out there from every destination and travel decisions, I also know that I'm not going to be able to win the battle on my own with just Visit Myrtle Beach. So what we've got to start doing is think about our entire sum of our experiences as a collective marketing voice, right? And so we almost take on an agency role within our destination where we, to your point, lift up all of our hotels, attractions, events to a place where they're the ones that are driving citations. They're the ones that are creating content. They're the ones that are telling first person perspective experience narratives that no one else has that content for. But we can't do it on our own. We've got to have to weaponize our entire stakeholder base to do it in unison. And the only way we can do that is through education. So we're going to have to spend a lot more time talking to our stakeholders, educating them, becoming a voice, a trusted voice with them. So that, I mean, and people like Kara Franker are doing a great job of this, right? She's writing content on her Substack aimed at her stakeholders, telling them how to navigate this stuff. Like, I think every DMO needs to be doing that kind of stuff. So they see us as valuable, invaluable in this future because we're way more sophisticated from a marketing perspective than any of our stakeholders are. Most of our stakeholders, let's say, they're struggling with these same things. They're going down the same pitfalls. We're the ones that can be the saviors of them in a way that gets them out of it, I think. So that's the strategy that
Absolutely.
we're following.
Yeah. We've been also implementing a plan for getting our university students or those that are in marketing or in writing English departments to learn how to write in that's structured in a way for LLMs so that we can start deploying them to the partners and stakeholders that need it. So pretty much creating, to your point, Stuart, you mentioned that Mojo Summit, the content army. We want to do something very similar in our destination as we, create closer partnerships with them and really show the value of what we can do for this destination.
And we're taking that content army to the next level too. So what right now we sort of have our own content army that Visit Myrtle Beach contracts and they write for us and we publish on our channels. The next step with the help of Adam and his team is to create a marketplace where we maximize the size of that content army and invite more people to join it, but we're also a broker between the content army and all our stakeholders. So they can start to leverage these experts in our destination that know how to write or hear boots on the ground and having experiences. And I think that's a level of stickiness that we don't have right now with our members, a value for them being a part of our organization that they can't recreate on their own. They can't go build a content army, right? But we can,
Right.
and then they can benefit from those economies of scale. So I think we have to start looking at what are those opportunities. We're probably going to reboot our entire, we have a sort of a bunch of co-op and marketing programs that we sell to our stakeholders every year to generate unrestricted dollars. And we go through it, we sell it around June, July. So we've already sort of passed the point of no return for this coming June. But by next year, I think every single product and service we sell is going to be fundamentally different than this year because their
Absolutely.
needs are different, right? They don't need clicks and visits anymore because those are going to be difficult to deliver and aren't really moving the needle. They're going to need help navigating this new world order where consumers are researching and making decisions in a completely foreign way that we haven't seen before.
Absolutely.
Can I ask a dumb question?
Yeah.
Right now we have boards, right? That every DMO has that
Are you saying
they're
we should eliminate all the boards? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's my vote.
You
No,
heard
let's
it
do
here
it.
first.
I
Eliminate the
actually,
boards.
if the difference maker in whether or not we're visible in AI, and of course, I agree with you, Emily, that we're in the visibility economy at this point. Do we need to have some sort of a destination brand task force or something like that to come up with? First of all, how do you measure the current state of the brand and build a roadmap of where does the brand need to go? Not the brand for Visit Myrtle Beach, the organization, or Visit Corpus Christi, the organization, but for the entire destination as a whole. And should that be somebody that builds a roadmap together and then works together on the delivery of that brand and measures the progress over time?
If you're not already measuring that, you're already screwed, right? You should,
Well,
every destination should be measuring that stuff through Net
but there's
Promoter
brand.
Score, through social sentiment, through surveys to their visitors and stuff.
But is that the right methodology? I'm not
Why
sure
not?
that like
I think
brand awareness from humans is very different than long-term brand visibility
visibility.
that transcends humans and technology.
I would say those are two separate numbers. You have brand visibility and you have brand sentiment. But yes, I think sentiment is going to be influenced by your visibility. So I think, there's going to be two
And
different
vice
things
versa.
and vice versa. But I think, brand visibility being its own score on how are you remaining visible is your are your articles is there's relevancy, there's coherence, there's visibility, there's so many different factors that go into the visibility of an LLM feeding the content that it needs to know to see you, and then the sentiment being influenced on that. So I think brand sentiment in itself, yes, you got to measure that. Brand visibility, yes, but brand sentiment is one of our main four KPIs for the year that we
What are
make
your other
sure.
four? What are the three?
We have we actually have partner sentiment as one, room nights, of course, economic impact, of course, brand visibility. Am I missing? Did I say four? That's four.
It's four.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. And that makes a lot of sense. We're re rethinking all of our metrics right now. We actually went through a whole exercise with our board last meeting or meeting before talking about who is our customer, what is our ultimate purpose. We're going to actually ratify a new mission and vision in the next meeting. And we've begun to build from the ground up a brand new dashboard to measure impact. And we've got a couple of different categories that we're looking at too that are a little lower in the funnel than you're looking. But I think every DMO should be rethinking why does it exist? That question, go back to first principles and saying, why do we exist? What is our purpose in this destination? What are the things that are unequivocally true? And how do we build back from that? And what isn't true is a DMO exists to drive traffic to the websites of our partners. That's not a fundamental reason to exist, right? That's a measure that we've created to sort of as a proxy for value. But that proxy is going to disappear, or at least become a lot less valuable, and then we get into this trap where we're chasing a vanity metric, and it's causing an incentive that warps our real purpose. You know,
Yeah.
it's going to be a challenge. But I still think the fundamental problem we need to solve, and the AI teams, and I've talked to Google's engineering team on Gemini about this. is we need the AI companies to provide tools to folks like us to help us better understand. Because there's third-party companies that will do a ton of, hey, I'll automatically search for your destination 1,000 times and 1,000 things and tell you, right. But
Yeah.
it's smoke and mirrors. Like,
It's
that's not
all
real accurate data.
open APIs. Anybody could do it. Anybody could build a dashboard and connect the open APIs. And all you got to do is adjust your prompts, and that's your methodology. So agree. It's all the same. It's all smoke and mirrors. It's all the same thing. You can do it yourself. If you have someone savvy enough in your office to just grab an open API, have at it. Have a ball. We've actually started doing that on our own.
We have too. Diane's done some tools with us. Like, we recreated some of the tools that people are trying to charge $20,000 a year for. She's created in a couple of hours with Claude, so
Same that, and I won't name website vendors, but we just went on Lovable, vibe coded the exact same website in like 2 minutes. All we got to do is plug in the fonts, and I'm just like, man, once people discover, there I am, I'm causing a problem again. But it, I mean,
There's your next episode.
this and I'm
What a
worried.
teaser.
I'm gonna get a brick thrown through my window if I keep talking. But I
This is
think
when you know
there's
you're at the good stuff. What else?
there's I mean, man, guys, come on. Like AI is radically changing the way things are, and you just got to call the kettle black. I mean, this is the reality. 100%.
Complacency is going to be rooted out of our industry completely in the next 2 years.
Yeah.
Completely. At the individual level, at the company level, everywhere, it's going to be completely rooted out.
Yeah, agreed. And if you're uncomfortable with that kind of a statement, you've got basically two choices, right? You can hang up your bag right now and walk away from the industry, or you can get busy trying to change it. Like,
Play
that's,
offense. Agree.
yeah, you've
And
got to go on offense.
you mentioned I like we see the K-shaped economy. The same thing is happening with our coherence on how we approach our work, and it's scary. It's sad. Like you see, and there's something I learned at South by Southwest this year, and they referred to the middle workforce crisis, and that the majority of those that are going to be impacted by AI and enterprise adoption is going to be those in the middle management, the middle, those that have really perfected the craft but are not yet senior. And it's because they're going to be the slowest to adopt for the most part. They have already learned the ropes. They already feel comfortable in what they're doing, and it's going to be a challenge for them to adopt. But you also have memes out there of CEOs wrangling their whole team and just driving 200 miles an hour while everyone's like, hold on, while we're like, we're going to adopt AI. We're like, what does this mean? And then you also have the people that are coming into the workforce over time are going to be fully AI ready. Maybe not yet. I see a lot of pushback with the younger generation on AI, but over time, it's the same thing as taxi drivers protesting Uber, and now Uber drivers protesting Waymo. It's the same thing. It's going to keep going, and you just got to adopt, whether you like it or not, that's reality.
Yeah, we talked on the last episode in the Stu's News about the backlash of younger generation with AI as well. And I think it's inevitable that, regardless of how they feel about it, they understand that if they don't embrace it at some level, that they're not going to have a place in the current structure, right? And so we were on a call earlier with Jeanette Rausch. Emily and I were, it's an AI think tank that she does. If any DMOs want to get involved in that, reach out to Jeanette on LinkedIn or at US Travel. But she was talking about, and I forget which state it was. Do you remember where she was talking about they're going to train interns on, they're going to go through the Anthropic.
I wasn't invited, so I wasn't there.
Yeah, you're not a DMO. Sorry. No vendors, 30 vendors allowed. But I forget which state it was, but there's a university there that is training folks, the students, going through the Anthropic certifications, which, if you haven't done that, I would recommend having all your staff go and look at some of the videos that they're doing, the training. But then they're going to put them as interns in businesses, and their sole job will be to shadow other people, learn their function, and then suggest ways AI can automate or make things more efficient, right? So all of a sudden, you're this low cost team is able to maybe drive the most value within your organization. And there's not a company right now where you couldn't allocate some resources to that kind of philosophy, either bringing in interns or some of your low level employees that aren't that expensive, and put them on that project of meeting with people, understanding their process, the actual workflow. Now, if you're Emily, I don't know how she does this. She must have 40 hours in the day, but she's doing that at Corpus Christi individually. She's meeting with individual team members and building out AI plans for them. But I think it's inevitable. We've got to get to that point where every DMO has someone or some team that is responsible for looking at ways AI can help move your organization forward.
Yeah, it's going to be incredibly important to do this. Everyone is at a completely different level of understanding right now. So, those that don't have this role yet, start thinking about who is going to be the lead on it. But the first thing to do is just survey your team and make it a really, like, you can even ask Claude to help you create the survey of, hey, I need to survey my team. I just want to get a readiness survey created on where is everyone at in their AI journey and their ability to adopt. And then the second survey to deploy is, and that first survey can inform your AI policy. So start with that first before you create a policy and then just throw it on people. Please do not do that. Start with the survey first. But after you develop that survey and you're about to start training people on it or want people to start adopting it, and before you even get a team plan or anything going, survey them again and ask, what is the one thing that you would like to learn that is going to make your job easier? What is redundant? What is it that you would be using Claude for or whatever? And that way you can individualize the training specifically for that role. Because I think about, the reality of a sales team. They're busy. They're on their, like, they don't want to spend time. They don't want to spend more than 5 minutes with a marketing team member. They're just like ready to go. But if I can get them, just 15 minutes of their time to say, hey, you said you need help with the RFP process. It's really annoying. Well, this is what we can do for an automation workflow. I'm going to walk you through it. Now you've given them a spark of, oh, shoot. I'm saying shoot. There is something I can use here, and I'm going to start actually applying it to my daily work. And oh my God, wait, it went so fast. Now I'm going to keep going. And now you've created that snowball effect. So that to me is the best way to get people on your team to not think of it as the scary new thing and make it actually something that's compatible with them. We just set up AI assistants for everyone. Everyone gets an AI executive assistant, and it is rudimentary, like super easy step by step. Here's how to install it with Cowork. So everyone has one Cowork executive assistant, and we have a chat going on Teams of what did you learn this time? Like tell us some cool stuff that you figured out. And that itself has started to snowball effect. So it's slowly happening. So, for those that are like, I don't even know where to start, there's your roadmap.
Great. Amazing. I'm going to ask you to send me all of your cheat sheets and
I
your
know.
frameworks that you've
I want your
developed.
executive assistant skill.
Oh, it's really fun. And we, what was it? Rip and repeat.
Yeah, that's what
Okay,
Matt Benson
so
said.
yeah, I quote Quentin Tarantino where he says, great artists steal. There's this awesome guy called Michael Christ, and he's on Substack, Michael Christ. He wrote an entire how to set up an executive assistant, and I literally copied it. It's a full way to do it. I don't know if we can put it in a link somewhere, but
Yeah, I'll grab it and put it in the link.
yeah, if you go to his Substack, there's a post called How to Turn Your Claude Cowork into Your Chief of Staff. That is what I used, and I modified it slightly so that it's more catered to a DMO. But that's your framework. If you use that, it's a 20-minute setup, and they give you copy paste prompts. That I just copied that, and I'm like, I have no shame in copying people. Like, made it really easy for me.
That's great. Yeah, I'll put a link
Awesome.
to that in the show notes.
Yeah, I
This is
just sent it.
amazing. Awesome. Emily, I could talk to you for another hour. This is great. This will probably be the number one episode again in like a couple of months. Once we'll let someone else overtake you for a little bit, and then you'll regain your crown as the queen of this show. So we appreciate you
Oh,
being on again.
thanks for having me.
The Dusty Queen.
Dusty Queen. Okay, that
There you
has a
go.
ring to it.
In all
There you go.
seriousness, Emily, the work that you're publishing on Substack, I have found it to be incredibly valuable and have quoted it many times in meetings and podcast episodes. So keep doing what you're doing. It's making a difference.
I'm glad to hear that. I mean, that's the goal is like, I mean, there's a lot of noise out there. We just, and I really want to see other DMO executives put their own words out there because it's exciting to hear that people are resonating with what I'm saying. But I encourage everyone to do this. Like, it's a community and we're busy. We're in so many conferences, we're in so many meetings, we're juggling so much for our own destinations. It's important that we remember that we're all here for each other.
Yeah, I agree. And you know what's interesting is a lot of folks will use the excuse, I don't have time to do this, right? I don't have time to go and write or think through. What I'm finding is the more I do that, the more it makes my own thoughts coherent, and I'm learning from myself as I try to articulate my thoughts in a way that other people can digest, and it's making us and me better at being able to navigate the future by just spending a little time with my own head. And I'm not saying go use AI to write your stuff, right? Because then you're not actually rigorously wrestling with it and debating it inside your noggin. So go spend some time thinking through some of this stuff, and then post it. Have some courage and some
Yeah.
imagination. That's what we need in this industry. It's the only way we're going to survive.
Yeah, agree.
So Emily, other than Substack, we'll link to that, your Substack in the show notes as well. But where else can folks find you?
Find me on LinkedIn. Emily Zertucci, exactly like it sounds, Zertucci. I'll be there.
Awesome. Well, we appreciate you being back on the show. Adam, if they want to find you, where can they do it?
Adam at thebrandrevolt.com. You can find me on LinkedIn or, of course, on Tourism IQ.
And don't forget, when Adam says you can find him on LinkedIn, he really means his AI written slot that he had his assistant write, right?
Some of
You
it,
gonna defend
yes.
that? You're just gonna agree? You're not gonna
Huh?
defend that?
Well, here's the thing. And hold on. This is really, really important, Stuart. If you are good at gathering and synthesizing context, you can turn over tasks like that that are still in your voice, they're still your context and content. And by the way, those posts have generated more engagement than any of the ones I wrote myself without Claude helping me out and organizing it correctly. So, yeah, it's absolutely AI assisted, 100%.
But that assisted is great, right? It's the written
Yeah.
stuff. I know you and I both had people in our comments recently that just it's pure AI
Oh.
generated nonsense, and it has the opposite effect than is intended. Like they're trying to sound smart, they're trying to build relationships, and it turns me off so fast. I can't stand it. So
Yeah, feel that.
don't do it, people.
There's even somebody in the DMO space, and I'm not going to out him here, although I did just say it's a guy, but
So invite him on the
that
show.
has automated comments and it drives me crazy.
Oh.
Yeah. Don't do automated comments, guys. It doesn't make you look good. It
No.
absolutely erodes. All right, guys. Well, you can find me, Stuart.Butler, at visitmuddlebeach.com. And please leave a review. We like those. We read them out. And Emily, we're gonna shame you into leaving a review before
Ooh.
our next episode. So that's our new rule. If you come on the show, especially if you've been on the show four times,
Apple.
you've got to go to Apple and leave a review.
Should I
That
leave
would be
four
amazing.
reviews?
Yeah, well, I think
Yeah.
one is plenty. We'll take
Okay.
one.
Have your AI leave four reviews.
I'll
There
have it automated. You'll
you
know it's
go.
me.
As
AI
long as it's
slot.
your context.
Keep lots of M dashes in there.
Lots of
That's what
M
we want to see.
dashes, and it's not this, it's
It's
that.
that. Oh, drives me crazy. All
Same.
right, Desties. Thank you for tuning in again. Until next time, this has been Destination Discourse.
Thanks, everybody.
Got it right that time, Adam. I said
You did a really good job today.
it.